This is baseball. I'm Brandon Johnson. Let's open up the show with a little standings update about 10 games into the season. Then we'll get into some news and stories that have been going on throughout the season and throughout the week. So in the American League Central, the Cleveland Guardians are leading that division at 8-2. Yankees leading the East 9-2. The Angels leading the West at 6-4. In the National League, the Braves 6-3 leading the East. NL Central, Pirates are 9-2. And out West, the Los Angeles Dodgers are 9-4. So some of those names to be expected, some of them a little bit surprising, but again, very, very, very early in the season. So obviously a lot of that will even itself out and we'll see who is for real and who's just hanging around for a little bit as the season progresses. Now, I closed the show last week talking about the Oakland Athletics and their kind of situation of where are they going to play next season, because this is the final year that the A's are in the Oakland Coliseum because the lease is up. And the city of Oakland reached out to the A's in an effort to extend that lease to with some contingencies to try and possibly keep the team or keep the naming rights of the team or be in a bid for a potential expansion down the road. While the A's met with the city of Oakland, they also met with the city of Sacramento, which was one of the sites that seemed very likely that the A's could potentially play while they're waiting on their Las Vegas stadium. Now, that has officially happened. The A's are set to play in Sacramento at Sutter Health Park, a AAA ballpark in Sacramento from the 2025 season to 27 with an option for a fourth year. That 2028 season, should the Las Vegas site reach any snags or delays, because the goal for the A's is to be playing in Las Vegas by opening day of 2028. So this would set them up in the meantime to have a temporary home while all that is happening. And while they're in Sacramento, they're just going to be known as the Athletics. They're not going to be the Sacramento A's. They're not going to be the A's formerly of Oakland. They're just going to be the Athletics. It's definitely going to be an awkward, interesting three seasons for the A's with hopefully a major league caliber roster playing in a very small ballpark. And this obviously marks that the A's are done in Oakland. I know that there were hopes of sell the team or hopes that they would find a way to stay in Oakland. But obviously, with this news, this is 2024 is the final year for the Oakland A's. And it stinks for the city of Oakland because this is not the first team. It's not even the second team that they've lost in the last 5-6 years. Obviously, the Warriors left Oakland and went to San Francisco. The Raiders left Oakland and went to Vegas. And now the A's are set to be in Vegas. So Oakland is without a professional sports team. And I've always wondered if you're an A's fan or if you're a fan of a team that relocates, do you continue to have an allegiance to that team or do you move on? And I've actually thought about that myself because in Kansas City, obviously the Royals have their own stadium situation and it doesn't seem like the Royals are going anywhere. I think they're going to find a way to be in Kansas City, but you know, there's that thought in the back of your head that maybe they do go to Nashville or maybe they do go to Portland or wherever, which again, I don't think any of that's happening, but I wrestle with the idea of that possibility and like, would I even be a Royals fan at that point? I feel like I'd have a hard time sticking with them if they leave, but maybe I'm different in that way. Now let's talk some pitching around the league, because there is a lot going on, a lot of drama surrounding pitching, which we'll get into in a second. But I wanted to highlight Blake Snell, obviously probably the most coveted free agent pitcher this offseason, signed late in the spring training with the San Francisco Giants. Well, he made his season debut last night and pitched for 3 innings, gave up 3 hits, 3 runs, 2 walks, 5 strikeouts. He was, you know, it was his season debut and the first real competition he's seen. So there's really not much to make of this. I think that there is going to take some time to stretch him out and get him into season form. Not to say that he wasn't working on the side, but I think it might be May before we see a Blake Snell that is at a Cy Young caliber level of play. Now, moving off of Blake Snell with some other big names around the league, there's been some high-profile pitchers that have gone down with injury, but in spring training, Garrett Cole got shut down due to some elbow discomfort. He was able to avoid Tommy John surgery, but Guardians ace Shane Bieber down, going to have Tommy John surgery. Spencer Strider, the Braves pitcher, has a UCL strain and is likely going to have Tommy John surgery. So multiple pitchers, there's a couple Marlins pitchers as well that are having Tommy John surgery, and a bunch of players rehabbing. You have Jacob DeGrom trying to come back, Sandy Alcantara trying to recover and come back into the league. Obviously, Shohei Ohtani, probably the biggest name out of everybody that is rehabbing major elbow surgery. So this has kind of raised some alarms. The MLB Players Association put out a statement saying that the pitch clock was to blame for the quote-unquote uptick in injuries for starting pitching or pitching in general. And I don't know if we have enough information to say that the pitch clock is the reason for these injuries. I think that we would really need to have, you know, 3, 4, 5, 6 years of evidence of injuries within the pitch clock era of Major League Baseball to know how big of an impact it has on pitcher health. And Garrett Cole, Yankees starting pitcher, kind of responded to the MLBPA and MLB, the owners were kind of going, you know, put out counter statements about it. And Garrett Cole was just kind of annoyed that MLB and MLBPA couldn't get on the same page about a solution for pitcher injuries, whether it is the pitch clock or it's pitchers just needing to do something different. But, you know, MLB and MLBPA not getting along or not being able to get on the same page about something is not new, and it's definitely something that's not going to change. But definitely something to watch, because I personally think that the pitch clock is great for the game, and I think a lot of people hold that belief. I would imagine players hold that belief that you can pretty much guarantee that a game is going to be 2.5 hours and you'll be on your way. I think less is more, and I think most people would agree with that, except for, you know, baseball purists, if you will, that just don't like the idea of change. We like the way the game was, so why are we changing it? But so again, I would need to see more evidence with injuries and if there's a correlation with the pitch clock to know if the pitch clock is responsible for this. But I got curious and I found an article from The Athletic, Ken Rosenthal, that came out in March. And it was, it's titled Prominent MLB Team Physician Sounds Alarm on Pitching Injuries. And one of the game's leading orthopedic surgeons is citing the advent of the sweeper and power changeup as significant reasons for the spike in injury. Dr. Keith Meister, Texas Rangers head team physician, says teams are exacerbating the problem by emphasizing pitchers' performance over their availability. This is all really the first two paragraphs of this article. And to further my Kevin Meister's credibility, later on in this article, it says Meister is who pioneered the hybrid elbow procedure that combines a traditional ligament reconstruction with the addition of an internal brace, said surgical techniques changed markedly over the past decade in response to how pitching evolved. Further on, it says as teams increase their emphasis on velocity and stuff, injury list placements for pitchers rose from 241 in 2010 to 552 in 2021 before decreasing slightly each of the past two seasons, according to a Major League Baseball spokesperson. The days pitchers spent on the IL more than doubled over a slightly longer span. So honestly, those numbers right there kind of say that maybe it isn't the pitch clock and it's the amount of, basically the amount of breaking balls and velocity that these pitchers are bringing to the table. He later goes on to talk about Tommy John and he says, quote, "We used to say you get your one Tommy John, you're good. Then it was you get 10 years out of one. Then it was 7 to 8. Now guys break down in 3 to 5 years, depending on who they are, the stuff they have and what they throw." So these Tommy John surgeries, these reconstructive surgeries on players' elbows are not being effective. They're not holding up as long. And I think it just comes down to throwing super hard and just the amount of breaking balls and stuff that these pitchers have. Because all of these pitches put a huge amount of strain on your arm. And again, in relation to the sweeper that I talked about earlier, being one of the possible contributions to elbow injuries, is the sweeper has grown from being a 1.3 to 4.3 percentage league wide, according to StatCast. So again, there's a lot of different opinions as to why these injuries are occurring, and we will probably dive a little bit deeper into this topic at another time, because it is interesting, because it seems like every other week a pitcher is going down, whether it's a big name, a big star in the league, or just maybe a pitcher you don't know. Now, I'm going to close the show talking some American League Central, some Kansas City Royals. Now, I told you during the opening day episode that I just felt like it was more likely that a team like the Cleveland Guardians, Detroit Tigers, or Kansas City Royals won the American League Central over the favored Minnesota Twins. And right now, again, very early, but the Minnesota Twins are in fourth place. They've won 3 games. They're 3-5. 2 of those wins came the first 2 days of the season. So they've done a lot of losing. Now, the Guardians are on top at 8-2. The Tigers are 6-4. Now, the Tigers just lost a series to the A's, but let's talk some Kansas City Royals, because obviously that's my team. So going into the season, it was kind of this, you know, they've done a lot of work in the offseason. They brought in Michael Wacha, Seth Lugo, made some changes in the bullpen. In fact, there's only 7 returning players in 2024 that were on the roster in 2023. So big changes, huge roster turnover, and for the better, because obviously last year was one of the worst seasons in Royals history. So we're 10 games in. The Royals are 6-4. They just swept the Chicago White Sox. The Chicago White Sox are having a horrendous time all around. They have They're on a historically bad start to the season for from an offensive standpoint. Now, the Royals, again, they swept the White Sox, and you could say, oh, well, that doesn't mean anything. It's the White Sox. They stink. But I think it does mean something, because I think good teams, and I think the Royals are a good team. I think if you're a good team, you better win series against bad teams. You better beat teams like the Chicago White Sox, whether it's taking 2 out of 3 or taking 3 out of 4 or even a 4-game sweep. This was, I believe, the first time that the Royals have had a 4-game sweep in 2+ years. So it's significant. And whether it's the White Sox or anyone else, that's a tough feat to accomplish. And it's good for the Royals. And I'm going to continue with them. So their starting pitching has been lights out, 1 through 5. Cole Reagans, Seth Lugo, Brady Singer, Michael Wacha, Alec Marsh, they've all been great. Cole Reagans is looking like the pitcher that we all thought he could be. He's picked up exactly where he left off last season. Seth Lugo, Michael Wacha have been serviceable. Now, everyone's through two starts. They've been great. Lugo's been great. They have so far done exactly what they've been expected of to come into Kansas City and bolster a rotation that needed all the help it could get. Now, Brady Singer has been incredible, and he's looking like 2022 Brady Singer, which is obviously great to see. If you remember anything about that season, he was in Cy Young candidate talk, and he's going to find himself right there again if he continues to do what he does. Now, the Royals, the starting pitching has been fantastic. Now, the bullpen has been kind of the issue. One of the big off-season acquisitions was the relief pitcher Will Smith, who's been on like 3 straight World Series teams. He was brought in to be the closer, and he has been not good. And he's already kind of been taken out of that closer role. He came into the 9th on Friday night with a lead and gave up a hit and a walk, got into trouble early, and Matt Quatrero made the bold decision to pull him and brought in James MacArthur. James MacArthur generated a ground ball, and the Royals turned a double play to end the game. So I don't know what the answer is on who the Royals closer is, but it's definitely not Will Smith right now. Not to say that he can't win it back, but actually the bullpen is the reason that the Royals aren't 7-3 or even 8-2. There's been multiple times this season where they have either put the game out of reach or blown games. The Royals played Baltimore last week. The Royals really should have taken 2 out of 3 against Baltimore. They ended up losing that series largely due to the performance of the bullpen. But as a whole, the Royals team ERA is 2.53, which obviously is largely due to the starting pitching. That's 3rd in the league, by the way. They have a whip just over 1, which is right where you want to be, in an opponent's average of 2.08. So really putting together a nice campaign to start the season. And offensively, they've been kind of hit or miss. They were having a lot of trouble with driving in runs with runners in scoring position early in the season. Their average, they're kind of middle of the road. They're team batting average 245. They have an on-base percentage of 303 as a team. Those are both numbers that you want higher. They have their top 5 in slugging in the league. They have 432 slugging percentage, OPS of 735, which is your on-base plus slugging. But all things that can be improved upon, and it's a team that through 10 games looks like a team that can be competitive. It's felt different. This was one of those things where I was hoping, you know, 3 episodes into the season, that I wasn't already writing the Royals off. And at this point, I feel like they have a lot going for them. Obviously, Bobby Witt Jr. has been sensational. And they have been getting key hits in situations, in big situations, creating wins. MJ Melendez did it like three times in the last week. Just big hits in the seventh inning. And that's exactly what they need to do to continue to be successful. Now, let's take a look ahead at the Royals' schedule for the rest of the month. So, starting tonight, they're going to host the Houston Astros. Cole Reagans will be on the mound. Now, obviously, Houston Astros, one of the better teams in recent years in the American League and the league in general. Now, they're coming in at 2-7. That, again, doesn't really mean much that their record is what it is. But this is going to be a good test, again, early for the Royals to kind of see where they stand in this league. They're going to go on the road after this for three games against the Mets and the White Sox. That should be a six-game stretch that should be really positive for the Royals. And then they're going to go host the Orioles and the Blue Jays, both of which are playoff teams, and then back on the road against the Tigers and Blue Jays. Now, I'm really looking forward to that Tigers series at the end of the month in Detroit because, as I've said multiple times now, I think the Royals, Tigers, and Guardians are the teams to actually beat in the AL Central, so it'll be good to see a clash between two of the teams that I think will be fighting for a potential playoff spot down the stretch. Now, I say all that, I don't want to get too ahead of myself. I am kind of breaking this season for the Royals into phases. And the first one is be relevant by May 1st. Be relevant while the NFL draft is going on, or just after the NFL draft. And then Mother's Day, by mid-May, 6 weeks, 8 weeks into the season, are you still something to pay attention to? June 1st, if you're still competitive when we're going into June, then you have a real shot of being a team that can be part of the postseason. And then you get into July, you get into the All-Star break. Are you going to be buyers at the deadline? And then you just go from there. NFL training camp. Are we talking about the Chiefs, or are we still kind of interested to see what's going on with the Royals? And then obviously September, you know, are you out of it, or is there a shot that you are, you know, maybe you're a division leader, or you have a shot at one of those three wildcard spots? Again, a long way to go, but definitely a lot of positives with this Kansas City Royals team early on in the 2024 season. So that's all I have this week. Thank you for listening. I will see you next week.